Welcome to season two of Beyond Beauty. I'm so excited. Where I talk with visionary artists who share their journeys, influences, and creative processes. My name is Jacqueline Cofield, and I research and study artistic praxis. This season brings together a wonderful and diverse lineup of voices, artists whose roots and cultural backgrounds shape the art they bring to the world. Each conversation reveals not just the artwork, but the personal and collective narratives that inspire it. Join me as we explore the intricate blend of heritage, creativity, and purpose that defines these remarkable women artists. Today, I'm honored to be in conversation with Kelly Sinapa-Marie, an extraordinary multidisciplinary artist from Guadeloupe. Kelly's art is a powerful exploration of identity, ancestry, and memory, deeply influenced by her Tamil and Afro-descendant roots. Growing up in Guadeloupe, she found herself in a cultural crossroads that led her to question, research, and creatively represent the complex histories often overlooked in her education. Today, we discuss how her work challenges colonial narratives and reconnects with ancestral knowledge through diverse mediums like collage, painting, drawings, and photography. Join us as Kelly unpacks her artistic journey, her connection to the natural world, and the resilience she embodies in her practice. Join me as Kelly unpacks her artistic journey, her connection to the natural world, and the fortitude she embodies in her practice. Kelly Sinapa-Marie, thank you so much for being here today. It is my honor to be in dialogue with you, in community with you today. Are you in Guadeloupe right now?
Yeah, I'm in Guadeloupe. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I first encountered your work not too long ago at the Armory Show. Mm-hmm. And you had this beautiful painting. And my daughter, I was at the Armory Show in here in New York City with my daughter, who's 6 years old. And she mm-hmm. ran over to your painting and we had a whole conversation about it. And I was like, I'm going to contact Kelly because we have questions. It's funny how life works like that. And I'm just so excited to learn from you today.
Thank you.
So you grew up in Guadeloupe with an understanding of Afro-Caribbean identity. And then later you discovered your Tamil heritage. Can you share mm-hmm. how these early experiences shaped your perspective on identity and culture?
Yeah, so I learned late that Guadeloupe is a crossroads where many different histories intersect. From the first inhabitants, the Amerindians, to the Afro-descendants and Indo-descendants. And I learned this on my own. Because at school, this part was absent from our history books, and because my family was so well integrated in Guadeloupe that they didn't see the point of telling me about my roots. But I think their belief in Jehovah had a lot to do with it. Because religion took precedence over identity. So now I can say, after my research and after I'm reading a lot of books on this subject and on my history, I'm a descendant of the Indian laborers who were hired from the middle of the 19th century. To fill the labor shortage of the plantations when slavery was abolished. Mm. And the engagement, which lasted until 1888, and it was a form of slavery mm-hmm. disguised as a 4-year contract, which was not respected Because the Indians were supposed to return to India after 4 years, but the contract was not respected. So I discovered that the Indians arrived in a climate of tension because the freed slaves didn't understand why a workforce was coming to replace them. So the Indian had to find a place for themselves and integrate into this tense climate. And to be honest, the question of heritage interests me a lot. And the language they spoke, the religion they practiced, Hinduism, their rituals, their knowledge of plants. A lot of this knowledge was, has unfortunately been lost. And it's only in this, in the practice of Hinduism that it's still passed on. I mean, for sacred song in Tamil, ritual, music, the sacred use of plants. And there's so much to know that I can get enough.
Wow. Yeah, I remember being very fascinated learning the various parts of the history of Guadeloupe. And it's just a powerful, powerful history of also of resistance that I think a lot of people don't know about that played a really important role in liberation for African diasporic people, particularly in the Americas. I love this way that you're thinking about these transcultural identities, African and indigenous. And I really resonated with what you said about your schooling experience, how these identities, these cultures were absent in the curricula growing up in your schooling experience. And I had a very similar experience in upstate New York. So you're in Guadeloupe having that feeling, and I'm in a suburb of Rochester, New York, called Penfield, New York. And I was feeling, I remember like explicitly wondering when I was like 12, why am I learning about Emmett Till in Jet Magazine and I'm not learning about him at school? Like, I remember wondering, like, why are we not learning about important parts of African American history that I was learning in my family circles, my social circles, not at school. So I think that's really powerful to think about how across the diaspora, these in school curricula that are very much influenced by these colonial legacies, that they are invisibilizing these histories. And today is November 6, 2024. So today we're having this conversation. Actually, I'm so glad to have this conversation with you today because it's a nice distraction from the what's going on in our country. Because I, let's just put it like this. I was not very happy when I woke up. I felt pretty disappointed, but it is what it is. And I feel like part of the resistance is to come and create and to have these dialogues and to go back and center women artists, particularly from the Global South, just like yourself, who are doing this amazing work. So since you mentioned schooling experience, I was wondering if you could speak to any childhood memory of an experience that you had, it might have been at school or outside of school, that influenced you or interested you in creative expression and the arts.
So there is no specific event, but I do remember that when I was in primary school at age 7 or 8, the majority of my class was made up of Indian children. Because the village I grew up in, Saint-François, has a predominantly Indian population. And in my class, there was only one Afro-descendant child. So he has harassed about his skin color, his frizzy hair, because he wasn't like us. Nobody wanted to hold his hand except me. And what was happening was clearly racism. I'm very furious because the teacher didn't take the opportunity to talk about it with us. And it was supposed to be her role. And looking back, I think it was very hard for that little boy. So one of the questions I raise in my work is, what is the role of the real role of school apart from injecting students with knowledge? Isn't the aim also to help break down the boundaries between races and beliefs so that we can learn on the same level? And the choice of books studied at school is also important, in which we recognize ourselves close to ours and not just using emblematic European books like Les Fables de La Fontaine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking of books by Aimé Césaire, Marie Condé, Carl Torabulu, for example.
So how did learning about your Tamil ancestry change or expand your approach to your work? Did it impact your creative process or the themes that you explore?
So it was in 2015 that I began doing in deep research, asking myself questions about my origins and documenting this part of history that is still in the shadows. And the first book I read on the subject was The Proceedings of Symposium. Mm. They talk about the ethnographic part, cultural, and a lot of things who give me a global vision of the theme, what I wanted to approach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that since this search for identity, my work has evolved differently. There's something obvious and more fluid in the way I approach things. And there were more and more themes to tackle. And it was a bit like catching up with time.
Mm.
So the Notebook of No Return series is a long series that I don't want to finish.
Mm.
Whose starting point was my quest for identity. And I have explored several mediums like drawings, photography, video, textile, and paintings. And yeah. And I think my work grew stronger as I learned more about my history. And I had so much to say that I needed more space on the canvas.
Mm.
So the skin of my characters had become surfaces for stories, a space where I could also ask questions. And it's a skin like a diary or a logbook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's no doubt that my approach to my work has been enriched.
Mm-hmm.
And Common Thread began to emerge as my research progressed and my practice gained in the solidity. Yeah.
Mm. When you were talking about you are a multidisciplinary artist and you're working in so many different forms, how do you choose which medium? If you're going to do painting, sculpture, drawing, video, how do you choose?
I think I really want to explore a different kind of medium because the subject was so rich and I don't want to focus on one medium. I start with collages too.
Mm.
It was a mix on collages and drawing. I think about the first artwork talk about this quest of identity and this research. And after, I work a lot in a series, so I make a lot of collages, and after I'm coming to another techniques like embroidery on textile, drawing on textile, and after I try photography and with my body, and I realize a mask, and yes, I use my body to talk about my research and my quests. And yes, I do some video too. Yes, it was very, very, very rich. And yes, it was a period of like an exploration.
I love that idea of your multidisciplinarity, or I should say maybe transdisciplinarity, as an exploration, as even I would say a form of research. So San Brat, the schoolgirl figure in your pieces, who I saw in the work that I saw at the Armory show. And I think that was one of the reasons why my daughter was so intrigued, because the girl looked around her age. So she was like, what is this girl? And what are the kids doing? And why does she have three eyes? So it was a wonderful experience. We, of all the works in the Armory show, we connected on your piece. My daughter had the most questions, the most to say about your piece. So back to the question. So this character, San Brás, plays a central role in your storytelling. What does San Brás, this character, represent for you, and how does she help you convey your ideas about identity and resilience?
This young girl dressed in the school uniform, she's very present in my paintings. She can take on several aspects, and she's in a perpetual evolution. And I remember that to build this character, we did on old photos of myself as a curious kid, often with braids and blue ribbons in my hair. And she can take on any age, transform into anything, have many names, and represents the hope of better world. Even if it may seem naive, but I believe that in these chaotic times, we need a little hope. And what she really wants, these little girls, is to create a link between the earth, human, vegetal, and animal species, and beliefs, in order to unite and build new worlds and reconnect with the earth, protect ancestral knowledge, pass on. And I have so much ambition for this character that it echoes to the Edouard Glisson, Port of Trembling, in French, La Pensée du Tremblement, which burst forth everywhere in forms suggested by peoples, without fear or irresolution, uniting us in absolute diversity in a whirlwind of encounters.
Wow. I mean, thank you for that. I needed this message today of all days, the day that I needed to learn the story of San Brás. I needed to learn that today, on the day that number 47 was reelected. I will just refer to him by number. So yes, that's very, very powerful. And I love the idea that she is not bound by time or space. And so I look forward to learning more and growing alongside her in your practice and seeing all the different ways that she'll show up. So you create compositions that blur the line between humans, animals, and the natural world. How do you approach these interconnected themes? And what do you hope viewers take away about our relationship with nature?
That's an excellent question. And it's undeniable that there are symbiotic relationships between plants, animals, and humans. And respect for this organism is the first step in establishing this link, which I think can be very strong if we're aware of it. And I hope that awareness will grow.
That's just a really incredible way of thinking about and communicating these roles and relationships that we have. You've spoken about how colonial history attempted to redefine human and natural relationships. How do you use your art to challenge these colonial ideologies and offer alternative narratives?
I'm trying to reinvent landscapes with vegetation that rejects the role of decorative elements given by the colonial context. Reinventing it means deploying it in several dimensions and turning its memory into a force. And nature was a place where slaves fled to hide, or endangered laborers hide to practice their rituals, their religions. And proposing alternative narratives means, for me, opening up the field of possibilities while protecting memory, history, and knowledge.
Yeah, it's really powerful how I'm in a school of education, so I think about literacies and all these different types of literacies that we have. And so when you were speaking, I was thinking about the multidisciplinarity of transliteracy, the multimodality of having these literacies in these different components of our lived experience in the present and also in our imaginary. So I'm just in awe and I'm just very fascinated. I want to revisit seeing your work in person. I can't wait for that next opportunity. So you weave elements, you incorporate elements from Hinduism, Christianity, yeah, literature, and your personal lived experience in your artistic practices. So how do these influences coalesce in your compositions?
So even in my entrances, multiple, the inscription are thought out for each part of the scheme in such a way that they're legible and don't blur the message. And I always paint the motif on the skin after sometimes a few months.
Oh, wow.
Which allow me to stand back and study which inscriptions are appropriate and adapted for each portrait. Viewers are often delighted to recognize details that echo with their childhood or personal experiences. So it's very interesting to observe the viewers, to observe my artwork.
You are currently in Guadeloupe, you're from Guadeloupe, and you're currently practicing in Guadeloupe. So you've chosen to stay in Guadeloupe as you continue to work. And I'm jealous because I'm in New York and I'm pretty sure the weather is much better down there. Actually, but today we have like almost 80 degrees. So today's, it's kind of strange for November.
Wow.
But how does being physically in Guadeloupe and staying there influence your creative process and the subjects you choose? How do the physical environment and local culture play a role in shaping your work?
I live and work in Guadeloupe, and my studio is based there. So I don't think I have the same artistic practice if I lived elsewhere. And in fact, I'm not very attracted to for example, to artistic residences, because I need a very long time to adapt with the place in order to be creative.
Mm.
And my studio here has become my research laboratory and where I have my habits, so with an environment that supports my process. And talking about an acoustic environment, the sound of nature, birds. So I need to feel comfortable and safe to create. So the physical environment plays an important role in my work because I'm very interested in the diversity of vegetation here and its healing power. And I'm interested in the whole landscape here because it tells the story of our ancestors and it's our heritage.
I love that you bring up this idea of safety as a condition necessary for your creativity. And I know you are not referring necessarily to like physical safety. I think.
Yeah, it's not like a material.
Yeah, it's more like emotional or psychological.
Yeah. It's like what is around me, the environment, the family, the sound, the ambience, the universe, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I recall an incident from my childhood when I was in school, and I remember walking into a classroom that had it was surrounded by pictures of the presidents. And at that time, this is pre-Obama, so there was no person of color on that wall. And I just remember not feeling safe in that room, not feeling comfortable, not feeling safe. So therefore, I was not paying attention the same way. And I was an honor student and everything, but I just couldn't. I felt alienated. I felt upset. I was bothered. I was distracted by the environment. So this idea of psychological safety or emotional safety is important to learning, but also to creativity. And so I love that you bring that up.
I understand.
Yeah. And speaking of your studio practice, can you talk about any rituals or conditions that you need? I heard you say there's certain sounds that you like. Is there a time of day you like to work? What does you in the studio look like? Or
to be honest, what helps me to be most creative, it's first a good night's sleep, a good coffee, daylight, new brushes, quality acrylic paints, good music, and a lot of books. And at the moment, I'm looking at books. The title is The Wonders of Created Things and the Curiosities of Existing Things, 13 centuries. So it's old and surreal drawings, and I love it. So these old engravings feeds my imagination, as well as a book of Edouard Glissant, A New Region of the World. And
You made me laugh for a second because you said new brushes and and I don't think I would laugh. That wouldn't have hit the same way. I don't think it would have been as funny to me if I hadn't just in the spring taken a studio painting class because I was like, I talk to artists, I study artists. Maybe I should like put myself in their shoes and take a painting class so I can understand better. And I had an amazing professor here at Teachers College, Columbia University, Dr. Gao. And so the thing about brushes, there's nothing like new brushes. The old brushes get hard. They don't work the same way. So when you said new brushes, I was like, oh, that really tickled me.
Yes, I say new brushes because I literally kills my brushes. And that's very, very, how do you say, prendre soin?
Yeah. Yes, it's so funny. And it's pointing to something actually very serious, and that is how important it is, the materials that artists are working with. Oh, and having new brushes for an emerging artist, for students, it's expensive. I had to go buy an art kit at Blick for my painting class.
Yeah, and it was like very expensive.
$300. Yeah. And I was like, when we started doing the paint with the acrylic, I was like, okay, I'm going to squeeze a little bit out. I was so scared to like use too much. I didn't want to waste anything. So it was such a fascinating experience. I think when you take a painting class, you just look at painters a whole new way. You understand and appreciate what you all, I'll say what you all, are able to accomplish just making colors to start with. And then the ways that you create these worlds is amazing. And I love it. And I'm grateful. So my last question I love to ask everyone is, so what advice do you have for emerging women artists, especially those exploring their own cultural histories? Are there particular lessons from your journey that you would want to share?
I tell them that knowing your history is the key to have a solid artistic practice. And for the lesson I've learned along the way, it's to you have to protect your heart and choose the projects you take, choose your exhibition spaces carefully, and don't hesitate to ask for advice. Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Kelly, do you have any shows coming up that you want to let everyone know about, or anything that you're excited about you want to share?
Yeah, I have a solo show for spring 2025 at the Gems Cohen Gallery, which represent my artwork. And very exciting.
I'm very excited. I can't wait for this. So thank you so much. Merci. Je veux dire ça en français. Merci pour avoir accepté mon invitation. Merci pour avoir fait l'effort de parler en anglais.
C'est avec un très grand plaisir.
Oui, c'était un plaisir de vous connaître et de parler avec vous. Thank you so much for being here. It was a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jacqueline.
And I look forward to following more of your work. Thank you for joining me in this insightful conversation with Kelly Sinapah-Marie. Through her work, Kelly reminds us of the importance of honoring and preserving cultural memory, challenging narratives that have silenced erased histories, and finding strength in one's heritage. Her story highlights art as a bridge across time and culture and a means of healing and resistance. Stay tuned for more conversations with artists who are redefining beauty, identity, and legacy. Until next time, keep celebrating the power and beauty in the stories around you.